You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and here comes the holiday season, which means here comes the picky eaters, which often includes spouses, uncles, and kids, which means you are in the right place, because here comes a chat all about how to plant party as an entire family. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. You know what? Socks. Not wearing compression socks. Yeah, absolutely. I used to think compression socks were those knee-high stockings my grandma wore with her flat tan Velcro strap sneakers. But that was before I learned about Comrade's incredibly fun-looking compression socks. Not to judge them too hard, but the peeps at Comrade legit spent 2 years developing these adorable, non-ugly, knee-high socks that provide all-day comfort and deliver certified health benefits. I'm sure you've heard that wearing compression socks on airplanes helps keep your blood circulating to combat jet lag, fatigue, and even reduce serious health risks like blood clots. But did you know that wearing compression socks makes walking Tommy or your pup, cooking in the kitchen, hopefully recipes from partyinmyplants.com or from my upcoming book, Party in Your Plants, out in April 2020, or sitting doing endless emails, all much more comfortable experiences? Comrade socks are proven by myself also, as well as studies, to energize our legs, reduce swelling, and increase circulation, all things that truly have been lessening the frequency that I have to go get cheap foot massages for my incredibly consistently sore feet. Do I feel kind of dorky promoting compression socks? Yes. Do I swear that you can trust me that these socks are worth me feeling dorky right now? Also, yes. And do I have a special offer for how you can get Comrade's rad compression socks for 20% less than non-Party in My Plants podcast listening humans? Hell yes. Go to comradesocks.com/party to see how fun their socks really are, and then to try ordering one pair or a little bundle for 20% off. That's comradesocks.com, comradesocks.com/party, and use discount code PARTY at checkout. And then have a party in your incredibly comfortable and nourished feet. Today's guest grew up on Hamburger Helper, chicken nuggets, grilled cheese, and zero plants. She now grows a robust garden, is coming out with her second vegan cookbook, and still makes grilled cheese. Eileen Gadosky Marino, whom you probably know on the interwebs as The Colorful Kitchen, considering she's been featured in the New York Times, Refinery 29, Veg News, and on this podcast in episode 33, has made a complete 180 in what she forks and how she feels as anyone I've ever met, except myself. We're kind of the same in our 180-ness. We're also the same in our birthday. And I know that because Eileen is one of my best friends. Aside from being my dear friend, though, Eileen is my baby mentor, or she will be once I have babies. Until then, she's setting out to be the world's baby mentor. And her second cookbook, The Colorful Family Table, is really your beautiful food porn-filled ticket to helping your entire fam party in their plants. And don't worry, I took a lot of notes that are over at partyinmyplants.com/168. So sit back and enjoy this chat, which I recorded with my tush on a meditation pillow and my computer on an empty away luggage box that was my temporary desk as I was moving, while, truly coincidentally, I was wearing my beloved Comrade compression socks. Eileen, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Thanks for having me, Talia. It's good to be able to actually catch up with you. And if this is the only way it's going to happen, then I'm excited about that.
The only other way it's happened since you've had baby numero dos, really, is when you've brought both babes and the hubs into the city and made them go somewhere so you and I could like get a matcha.
It's like a before or after a 3-year-old's birthday party.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we should say, though, this is your second visit to the Party My Plants podcast. You were on like 2 or 3 years ago chatting about our fave plants places in the city to eat.
Yeah, that was so fun. And I need to go back over that list because I haven't been to so many of those places in a long time.
A lot of them have closed, sadly. So yeah, we might need to update that. But now you live outside of the city and I'm moving, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, so we'll basically never do an updated list.
Exactly. Well, I want to start by talking about how you didn't always eat an abundance of colorful plants, which might be a shocking revelation to most people. But your food story is really a tale that like really no one would predict, because even though you went vegetarian at age 9, which is whack, you legit avoided like all fruits and veggies like tomatoes and peaches and oranges until you were like 19. So what happened? Fill in the gaps. Why'd you go veg at 9? Why didn't you eat any plants? What were you eating? What's happening?
I know. It's like, what was wrong with you, Eileen? So, okay. Starting at the beginning, I was always a very bland eater. And my parents gave us the type of food that was so typical in like the 90s, the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, where it's just like standard American diet. My parents did not like to cook. So whatever was easiest and our family would actually like was what we had. So that'd be like hamburger helper, pizza takeout, Chinese takeout, like whatever was easy and tasty, we would get it. And I liked the most bland thing. So it was chicken nuggets, french fries, mashed potatoes, and, you know, start all over again. So
and this was in Florida, right? I mean, you were born, were you originally raised in New York City for a hot second and then you moved to Florida?
Yeah, my family's from the city originally.
Hence all the takeout. That makes sense.
Hence all the very specific to like Jews from New York type of takeout. I was born in D.C. because when my dad was in medical school, so we like bounced around when he was doing the different stages of becoming a doctor. And then he got a job at a practice in Florida. So I had been there since like age 8.
Okay.
But we still ate like the type of people who live in the city and have access to all of the takeout, even yeah, though it was like not as good Florida takeout.
Right.
But
no offense, anyways, Florida, but seriously.
So, okay. When I was 9 years old, my parents actually were cooking a real meal, which was very unusual. And my mom was making lobster. And so she was putting, you know, the way you cook a live lobster into a pot of boiling water. And it just blew my little 9-year-old brain. Like I hadn't really connected that like meat comes from animals and like, you know, fish was like in the water and all of that.
I mean, she just like murdered an animal in front of your face. So I'm sure that was pretty shocking.
It was really shocking.
I had to close my eyes in culinary school when we had lobster day. I literally like closed my eyes. I'm like, I can't be in the room.
Yeah, it's a lot. And so I'm like, I'm a vegetarian. I'm out. But what did I like to eat? Like grilled cheese sandwiches, french fries. And so my parents were supportive and they tried to make it happen, but there was so little I would eat. And I was like a really scrawny kid. The pediatrician said I was malnourished and I would kind of like, it wasn't that hard to get me to eat meat. Like you would take me to Wendy's or something. And I was like, oh, the chicken nuggets, they're so good. I'd go back. And so I went back and forth forever until I was a college freshman. And I was living in the dorms and I had access to the cafeteria. And I sort of started thinking like, you know, maybe I'll try some of the stuff on the salad bar. And I started eating from the salad bar, which is like probably the lowest level of like vegetables that you could like fathom. Like, you know, however many years, somewhere. 12, 13 years ago, like the options were very different. And it's like probably, you know, like canned beets and like that kind lettuce. Of stuff. But exactly. So a lot of that, a lot of like ranch dressing all over everything. But anyways, the vegetarianism stuff, and I really felt like eating meat and eating animal products, like which at that point, you know, I was still eating dairy, like to the fullest extent. But the meat side was really out for me. And I haven't gone back since then. But then, okay, so let me also take a step back and say that I was a super sick kid. And I always had stomach aches at all times, especially after I ate. And I had such severe allergies that I really could never breathe through my nose. And I was always coughing. It always was like I had the flu. And I was on so many prescription medications for asthma and like the nasal inhaler.
Oh my God.
Everything you could think of, at least 3 prescriptions. at one time, and they made me so drowsy. I was just like so tired. I would come home from school and just like take a nap. I couldn't even go about my day. But I thought this was normal. Like I had only known my body.
Yeah,
I'd only known what it felt like to feel that way. I didn't know that better existed. Oh,
that's a thing for so many people. I always say this, that you don't know how much better you could feel until you start feeling better. But it's so hard to convince someone when they've gone their whole life feeling a certain way that like, hey, there's a different way you can feel it. That's like the hardest gap to make and encourage someone to go through.
I agree completely. Cause like, how do I know what it feels like for my stomach not to hurt after I eat? Right. I've never experienced that. But anyways, I was like maybe 20 years old in college, and I started kind of looking back and I'm thinking, you know, I'm so tired of feeling this way. I'm so tired of all my medicines. And, you know, I wonder if there's like anything else that could possibly help me besides the medicine that doesn't even work. And I had heard about the macrobiotic diet as just like this thing that like, you know, some like friend of a friend of a friend's like aunt cured their cancer and like it can make your headaches go away and just all these like really vague claims. And you have to remember this was in like 2006 or seven. So it was really before like there was a wealth of knowledge on the internet. It was before Instagram. Like,
oh, way before. There were barely, if any, I don't think blogging even really was a thing.
No, not really. Yeah. Like, to get the information, you would go to the bookstore.
Barnes and Noble.
And, like,
get,
exactly.
This is what I did because I went vegan around this time. I went in like 2008 or 9, and I was sitting there in Barnes and Noble scribbling on a yellow pad, like recipes from vegan books and all the things about health.
Right, because you couldn't even take a photo with your phone if you didn't want to buy the book.
Yes, exactly. That's so
Which
amazing.
I now frown upon as a published author. I frown upon that practice.
In my acknowledgments, I thank people for not doing that and actually buying the book and not pulling a Talia.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So you did that with macrobiotic diet, which if people don't know right now and they are listening, so they can't Google it, give a little spark notes about what that is.
So basically it's a traditional Japanese way of eating where it's all about balance and the food is all like hearty cooked food. So like whole grains, like brown rice, quinoa, millet, all of that, like all cooked vegetables, very little fruit, very, very little like flour, nothing processed, very little dairy or to no dairy, no meat, maybe a little fish. But so it's basically vegan minus fruit and like treats, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And a lot of recipes like really take a long time to prepare, like grains that are soaked for 24 hours and then cooked. But anyways, that's a separate part of it. I tried it on a whim. I went to Whole Foods. I've never been to Whole Foods before. I just bought everything in Alicia Silverstone's book, The Kind Diet. That's like the first book I started with because that was really accessible for me. Like there was a lot of information about macrobiotics out there that was like, you know, wasn't hip. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like interesting, but her book really spoke to me. I tried it. I ate that way for a full week and my stomach aches were just gone. And I just felt like...
I just got the chills. I like know the story.
Well, I vividly remember just looking around and like my body feeling lighter and just my existence feeling lighter and my brain feeling clearer. And I just had all of this energy and I stuck with it. And after a month, all of my stomach aches went away.
Wow.
And I just was like a completely new person. So anyways, I stuck with the macrobiotics very hardcore for about 6 months, but it's really a challenging diet to maintain, especially when you're a college student, because like I said, a lot of the types of foods take a long time to cook and, you know, there's very little fruit. And like once it got to be the summer, I didn't want to be eating like brown rice porridge for breakfast. I wanted like a delicious smoothie that would, you know, cool me off.
Yeah.
And so then I sort of started to, once I started to feel better, I had like a grasp on the foods that made me feel good. I started to experiment in the other direction, which is like raw food.
We literally have opposite stories. I started with raw food and then went through Syracuse winters and was like, I'm gonna need some of that rice porridge, please. And then had to find my balance. That's so funny. We were living in these like parallel universes.
I feel like that is the theme of our friendship though.
I know. And we're it's born like on the same day situation. For everyone who wants to know. April 27th, what up?
So like our stars are aligned, but by 2 years,
yes,
right?
That's true.
It's slightly different, but close enough.
Close enough. So you started eating some raw foods now.
Yes. And so that was great. But then, you know, I wasn't going to eat fully raw all the time. Like that also wasn't sustainable. And so I just kind of like released the idea of a specific paradigm within like the vegan umbrella, because I really felt strongly that like animal products were out for me for multiple reasons. Like dairy didn't feel good in my body. And I learned that the dairy industry and egg industry has most of the same issues that the meat industry has. Mm-hmm. And so animal products were out, but within like the vegan umbrella, I just sort of started to listen to my body and like eat what was in season and eat what made me feel good. And it really took a few years to kind of figure out like what I need and to be able to hone the skills of feeling what my body needs. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of where I'm at today. And so this was over 10 years ago that I got started.
And how would you describe your food philosophy today?
I would say colorful, not complicated.
Nice.
And I really just eat what feels good and what excites me at the market and what's in season and what's balanced with what's going to be easy for my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so amazing because hearing that you didn't eat vegetables and fruit until you were 19, you're raising your kids to be the exact opposite. And I think that's really special.
Well, I'm so aware of that because my parents were, well, it was a different time. I don't want to be throwing my mom under the bus. And I say mom because my dad was not involved in our food situation at all. I didn't want to eat vegetables and she didn't push the vegetables. It was sort of like what was working we would stick with. And so I wasn't continually exposed to it. And on top of it, I had a lot of sort of like textural issues around food. Like I didn't like the texture of certain things and like certain flavors were too strong for me. Mm. And all of that I really ended up outgrowing, but I felt so strongly that I needed to day one make sure my girls are exposed to real food and they have a foundation of what that looks like. So as they get older and, you know, they're at a party and they want to, you know, they're eating the junk food and they're doing all of that. Like I'm not trying to shelter them from the world of food because they're growing up to be their own people. But if they have that foundation of what real food looks like and tastes like and feels like in their body, I think that will serve them as they go out and like, you know, try the types of food we don't have at home.
Yeah. And so at the time you were growing up, was your mom also not eating real food or was she eating her planty stuff and you didn't want it and she didn't want to have a fight? So she was just like, okay, you can have French fries.
You know what's funny? There just wasn't such an emphasis on food to the point where I even remember. I mean, she wasn't. Like, I know she would have a salad, but like her salad would be like not the kind of salad she eats today. Cause actually today she's vegan and she eats basically the same way that I do. But that's
you inspired her. It's so funny.
Well, it's actually not me. I don't know if I've told you this before, but it was Oprah. My best friend Oprah was the one who got her started. And it sort of aligned that, that, you know, it's the same way that I eat. But anyway, so no, my parents weren't like eating great dishes and my brother and I were like in the corner eating chicken nuggets. We were all eating the same food and it was all like the standard American diet type of fare.
Got it. So, I mean, it's just so perfect that your newest book, The Colorful Family Table, is about this exact topic. I mean, it's so infused with who you are and what you're going through in life right now, raising a 3-year-old and a almost
9-month-old.
Yeah, almost 1 year in December, on December Christmas.
Yeah. Right? Yes, little baby.
Christmas miracle. so now you're in the throes of raising these two beautiful daughters and a husband who doesn't know how to cook for himself. No offense, Ross.
And, I didn't know it's out there.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Yeah, he's helpless in the kitchen. But other things, great. Magic, he's a great magician. He's fantastic. Anyway.
And that's for you, Ross.
Yes, there you go, Ross. And now you're inspiring other people to take care of their families and feed them plants from the get-go. So you mentioned that you had textural issues growing up. Do you remember being in moments as a child and being like, ewy, I don't want this because of texture? Did your mom tell you that you had textural picky eating stuff?
So I actually had a lot. The textural issues went farther than just food for me. I don't remember this far back, but my mom said that like from the earliest age where you could go outside and play, I didn't want to touch the dirt. And I said the dirt didn't feel good. And so she has her master's in early childhood education. So she was sort of able to identify what was going on with me right away. And she went out and got me all of these like texture things. And she like worked with me really hard to get me to be able to like touch different textures like and like be okay stuff. With different, exactly. And like different fabrics on my body. And all of that worked really well. But we just didn't get to the food stuff. It just wasn't the top of the priorities. And now, like, you know me, I will get messy. I am the messiest person. Yes. And it like almost went in the other direction.
I agree.
But
don't even use like spatulas. You're just like, let me just use my hand. I'm up in there like using a nice little spoon. And you're like, what are you doing? Just use your hand.
Like, oh, okay. That is so accurate. Yes. But if you come to my house, I promise I'll use a spatula when I cook for you. But anyways, the food stuff was really like fruit is what comes to mind. And I just remember like bananas were great. Like a banana was fine. But something like an orange, like absolutely not. That just the zing and like the tang of the citrus that now I appreciate so much. I just couldn't even, if someone was eating an orange near me, even the smell of it would bug me.
Wow. I'm glad I wasn't friends with you when we were little. Too high maintenance.
Well, I was an extremely shy child, so I was very happy to like be in my own corner doing my thing and not be near the kids eating the oranges. And I'm doing everything I can to like raise my girls to not be that child.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that because you have a 3-year-old and a 9-month-old. Your 3-year-old, baby V, Violet, how are you raising her to be open to trying new things? How are you not, or are you? I mean, is she picky? Like, how does one deal with picky kids? If you had to go back in time and deal with picky Eileen, what would you do?
Okay, so the two things I would say, if I could go back in time and like have my mom do this for me, I would say repeat exposure. So even though I said I didn't want to try broccoli, put it on the plate. I don't recommend you make your kids eat something or, you know, threaten them or bribe them or whatever, but just having it on their plate and having it just be something that's there, the end, repeat exposure, eventually they're going to take a taste. No matter how many times, even if it's like a little bit wasteful.
You've seen that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Like you've done that?
Oh, yes.
With what vegetable? Broccoli?
So I said broccoli because that was actually a big one for us because Violet right now is going through a major broccoli phase. She always wants broccoli. And it was like months. She went through months and months before this where she just didn't want to have broccoli. So whenever I was making a dish, like I wanted to include broccoli in because Ross and I like it, I, you know, would serve the entire thing to her. I wouldn't pick the broccoli out for her. But, you know, I would, if she said it was yucky or whatever, I would say, okay, well, you don't have to eat it, but it's there. And then eventually there was a dish where she just decided to try it. Wow. And I think repeat exposure is major. The other thing that my mom really didn't do, and this was really more so because she didn't enjoy cooking and she just wanted to get it over with, is to involve your kids in the cooking and the shopping and like letting them get a sense of empowerment from being able to have a say in what the family's eating and to be able to have the pride from making it. And that makes a really big difference.
So how do you involve Violet in the cooking? I know she has like a mini kitchen, like a fake kitchen, like a playground kitchen, right? Like in your real adult kitchen.
Yeah, she has a toy kitchen.
A toy kitchen, a playground kitchen.
Well, so that...
I'm clearly not a mom yet.
Oh, no, there's a toy version of everything. But, you know, part of it is she just wants to do what I'm doing. And when she's at the age now where her play is mimicking what she sees adults doing. So she sees me in the kitchen. She wants to be in her play kitchen. But now that she's older, she doesn't want the play kitchen all the time. She wants to actually be doing the things with me. And so one thing I'll do, let's say if there's a certain food or vegetable that like she doesn't want to try, she doesn't think she likes it, I'll take her to the farmer's market and let's say it's like squash because that's a great one. Squash comes in like all like winter squash, all different shapes and sizes, and it's like a fun thing to pick out. I'll let her pick one out, like, you know, let her pick out the colors and whatever and carry it around and then get home and we'll like make something together with it. And it'll be her special dish that she's making and maybe we'll get out a cookbook and she'll like hold the book and point to the recipes and she'll like, you know, stir the marinade that we're going to put on it. And she'll hold the timer while it's in the oven.
Wow.
And she really gets to, you know, I'm the one with the knife and I'm the one touching the hot oven.
Thank you for clarifying.
But, well, I do think people are like, oh, well, like this whole project is too dangerous for a kid. Mm-hmm. When in fact, there are like a lot of components that like the child could definitely partake in. And then you just sort of do the rest and they can do most of it.
Brilliant. So like she's holding the cookbook or she's, you know, like you said, she picked out the piece of produce at the farmer's market and even taking her to her farmer's market and showing her options. And then, you know, is she stirring? Like what kind of equipments can she be using at this stage? At age
definitely.
Three?
Yeah, she can stir. She can stir when we measure. She can scoop things out with like a measuring spoon. She can pour it into the bowl. Like if we're doing a marinade, I might like put the squash in and just have her shake the bowl. And that's really fun.
Has she ever made a mistake and like cried?
Oh, good question.
Because I can only imagine, and I feel like I've seen this in movies, like or in my own life, where like we're making cookies and I drop the bowl on the floor, and then I'm so mortified that I start crying, and then it's like traumatic, and then my mom's mad at me. I literally might have just made this up, but I feel like that's a real scenario. How do you handle it?
You know what? I don't think that's happened.
Watch it happen like this week.
Right, I know. But no, I mean, what could she do? Like, what? I just can't think of anything.
Like, she drops the bowl, and then you're like, whatever.
Pick it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think even if it were something where, like, you know, all the ingredients were ruined and we didn't have any more to make a second batch, I don't think I would make a big deal of it because, like, you're holding on to something that may or may not have happened in your childhood.
I think, like, this happened in my childhood.
Right.
Sorry,
so,
Mom.
Right. So I would probably, like, intentionally not make a big deal of it so that she doesn't have negative associations with whatever the dish is.
Is this therapy now? All of our issues are
childhood. We can go there if you need to.
Okay, no. So that's awesome. So that's amazing. So she's doing that and then she's seeing the finished product and now mm-hmm. she's excited. And now, did you say that you picked squash because she actively had said she didn't want squash? Did you say that?
No, I just said squash because I think, I don't remember if she ever had an issue with squash, but I just think that's a really fun one to get kids started with.
Oh,
just because they look cool.
So, okay, so that's amazing. So get them involved in the kitchen, get them, you know, if they're saying they'd act if we don't want something, just like casually put it on their plate. Has she ever like, you know, if she didn't want something and then she saw it on her plate, been like, I said I didn't want this. Like, is that ever a thing? Or it's just like, it's just there. Like, don't worry about it. You don't have to eat it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she's at the age now where she will throw a tantrum. If something isn't to her liking, like there will be a tantrum. But my whole thing with tantrums is I just let her have it. You know, I don't run and whatever it is, like whether it's food or something else, I don't like run to adjust the situation if it's a normal thing. Like, I don't know. I gave her, if suddenly she doesn't want her yellow socks, if suddenly she wants pink socks, and she starts screaming about it, I'm not going to go running for the yellow socks just to make her happy. I'm going to like wait for her to calm down and then talk to her about it. And then we'll go get the yellow socks together. So it's like the same thing with food. Sure, she might have a meltdown, but once she regains her composure, I'll talk to her and say, okay, if it's really bothering you, let's move it to another plate. But when she's hysterical, I'm not going to race around and try and make it perfect for her because she's part of the family. And I feel like, you know, it's all about the family eating together, and one person like losing their mind I'm not going to let that dictate the family meal.
That's awesome. And you've said, and I know this to be true, that you won't cook a separate meal and you don't really believe in cooking separate meals for certain family members, right? You will make one meal and just maybe leave off hot sauce if it's not for kiddos. Or how do you do that? I mean, that's a bold statement. And I feel that a lot of moms, my mom included growing up, it'd be like she's making four different meals for each of our four family members. That's a huge thing. So how do you navigate that?
So I grew up, my mom, as much as she didn't like to cook, she would cook four different meals for each of us. And she and my dad still eat two different dinners together every night. Oh, and so God. I watched her drive herself insane my whole life, mm-hmm. even though I was the one like making a lot of the demands.
Same.
But I never wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's really because, I mean, I'm not the family hired chef. Like, I'm a person with a certain amount of time.
I mean,
it
kind of is your livelihood, but whatever.
Well, right. I literally am the family chef, but when I'm speaking for like all mothers or fathers or whoever the person is who cooks dinner, you've got a lot of other things to do. And more likely than not, like, you're not getting paid to cook the dinner, and that's not how your time and energy should go. So no, I do have an advantage in that I've had this philosophy since day one. So I would imagine I don't want to make it seem so easy, because I would imagine if you're cooking your kids a separate meal, then what you're having to suddenly be like, actually, we're eating the entire thing together. That will cause a little bit more of a challenge, because I've been this way since day one. But I just don't think, I think my time is too valuable. I don't think I should spend my time cooking for each family member when I'm making food that, like, is nutritious, it's colorful, and is something that everyone will like. I'm not going to give Violet the grilled cheese sandwich she wants every night just because I know it's something she'll eat. I'm going to make something that will serve her in the long run for helping her establish a relationship with real food. And even if it's really challenging at one meal, I'd like to look at the bigger picture that in the long run, this is what is best for her and best for our family.
That's amazing. So you'll just, how do you decide then what to make for dinner? Like, walk us through that process, and then, like, what are some go-to family meals? I assume, and I know that they're all pretty much in your book, but, like, guide us through, you know, how dinner goes. How do you plan it out in advance, like a week in advance? Do you plan it out day of? What do you suggest other moms do? And yeah, take us there, please.
Okay. So let me pause and say, I would like to plug the course that I'm going to be putting out, because I cover this in extensive detail. I have a course coming out called Colorful Kids, and it'll be launching in January, and it'll cover everything I'm about to say in greater detail about planning ahead and recipes, as well as strategies for getting your family to all eat the same thing and eat colors and whatnot. But back to sort of what you were asking, how dinner comes together. Well, okay. So from a personal standpoint, I'm in the kitchen all day cooking recipes for my book or my blog or whatever. So I know I have an advantage that sometimes I'm making our dinner like during our work hours. Mm-hmm. So I get that benefit. But if it's not something that I'm making for work, I do like to plan ahead, and I'm a big believer in meal prep. So I'll go to the farmer's market on Sunday. I'll get a bunch of vegetables, and that night I'll just like put olive oil and salt and like roast all of them. And so once you have all those roasted vegetables, like put it over rice one night with tahini on top, mix it into pasta with marinara sauce, like use that vegetable with like a different grain and protein each night. And that's a way to knock like three dinners out of the way.
You kind of still eat macrobiotically-ish, macrobiotic-ish. Yeah, like, you know, you do a lot of bowls with tahini and grains and beans, and you do, I mean, pasta, but like gluten-free pasta is not technically macrobiotic, but it's like a warm grain with vegetables. Like, I do see that throughout your, I don't want to say work, but like throughout your work, your body of work.
No, definitely. I mean, that like was the way I started eating, and then I experimented with a lot of other things, but that's really what I come back to. And those are the foods when I can have brown rice or quinoa or a whole grain like that at least once a day, I really feel my best. And so that it's interesting you notice it, because I really like do eat that way 90% of the time.
Oh yeah. I mean, anytime I've come over to eat, you've made me a macrobiotic bowl. I mean, you don't say like, yo, here's a macro bowl, but like, that's how you eat. So actually, I'm going to interject. We'll go back to meal planning for dinners, but how do you go about constructing your bowls? Like, what's in your head as you're compiling one?
Okay. A macro bowl.
I love how you start every answer with, okay, get ready.
I'm really gearing up, because I do feel strongly about my bowls. I think that like a macro bowl type of thing is the perfect meal for meal prep, because you can make everything in advance. So there's always a whole grain. And usually for me, that is brown rice, because like I said, it makes me feel really good and I love it so much.
Do you use a rice cooker or just
I like it best on the stove.
Okay. Good to know.
And yeah, that is a great time and energy saver, but I like to make it on the stovetop. And I always boil it in vegetable broth. That's my little rice hack, because it tastes so much more flavorful.
Thank you for that. So brown rice or quinoa.
Brown rice or quinoa, something like that. And then a protein. And so that might be beans or tofu or lentils or, you know, sometimes we do like a lot of Ross likes a foam meat, like a tempeh bacon or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's usually like a roasted vegetable that you can prep in advance, which might be like sweet potatoes or, you know, whatever's in season. Then something fermented. And that's usually sauerkraut because we like sauerkraut so much, or pickles or kimchi. And then you need a really good sauce because mm-hmm. I'm describing a lot of things that, you know, haven't been cooked with seasonings. It's just cooked with olive oil and salt for the most part, and vegetable broth. And so I like a tahini drizzle. I like to mix maple syrup and mustard together. The sauce is where, you know, you can really bring the whole thing home.
Amazing. I mean, and I have to give you a public thanks that when Jesse's mom passed away, you came to our house and delivered all these components in little ball jars because it was such a tough time for us and we didn't have time to cook and we were just eating out. And you delivered these like this like week's worth of like macro prep for us so we could eat well while going through that process. So thank you so much. That was so sweet.
Oh my gosh, of course. I mean, well, that's like the type of time where you need home cooked food more than ever. And totally. You're not going to be doing it yourself. So
absolutely. I mean, I rarely do it myself now because life is so crazy, but it was really inspiring because you showed me like that making these foods can really last a week. I mean, that's what you did. You made a sauce. It was a tahini sauce. You made us tempeh bacon from your first book. You had a ball jar of sauerkraut. Maybe there was a rice. I don't think so because that's hard to you can't make rice in advance really, or can you?
I do. It'll stay good for maybe like 4 days in the fridge.
How do you like get it good again?
Well, okay. So when I reheat it, like in a little pot on the stove, I'll add a little bit more water to
there
it.
There you go.
Because otherwise it gets dried out.
This is a really good question because if people are meal prepping this in advance, whether they're gifting it to somebody like you kindly did or gifting it to themselves and their family, like would also be kind. How do you reheat, you know, pre-roasted vegetables and you know, cooked rice and all this stuff? Like what's your go-to method for that?
Right. So for the vegetables, just put it back in the oven at like 375. For the rice, put it back on the stove with a splash of water. And there's always the microwave. I mean, I usually don't use my microwave, but since having two kids, sometimes we get home, it's past dinner time, everyone's starving. There's like not time to turn the oven on. So, you know, the microwave is usually there as an option, It's not my first choice.
Got it. That sounds great. This episode is enthusiastically sponsored by a product that couldn't possibly float my boat more. Four Sigmatic. My boat is so floated by Four Sigmatic's mushroom drinks that any more floating would turn my boat into an airplane because it's flying. Okay, so the first time I tried a packet of Four Sigmatic mushroom tea and a glass of hot water, I was muy skeptical because of this whole mushroom thing being really trendy right now, and I'm always reluctant to hop on trend trains. Wow, we're really covering all the modes of transportation here. But I drank those shrooms, and I felt truly awesome. It's hard to explain. I just felt way more awesome than I felt before I drank it. Since then, I consistently consume at least one type of shrooms a day, and it helps me know it's going to be bright, 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 sunshiny day, even when it's rainy and gray. Because I am telling you, these mushrooms are magic. Although they don't make me hallucinate in a bathtub like my ex-boyfriend's famous magic mushroom experience, which in hindsight, he seemed way too proud of. But nobody's hallucinating the magical effects of these shrooms, okay? They are ultra scientifically proven to boost immunity and gut health. Yes, please and thank you. And the four different shrooms that Four Sigmatic uses most, hence the four in Four Sigmatic, wink, wink, they all do different epic things for your bod. Reishi helps you relax. Cordyceps give you a non-caffeinated energy for sports and stuff. Lion's mane, which does not come from a lion's mane, boosts your brain. And chaga is a mega charge for your immune system. I weave all four of those separate mushrooms into my life by way of the teas. That's what I'm talking about here, people, are mushroom teas that you dissolve in a packet of hot water and haya. But I also fancy myself some of their fancier shroom concoctions. They have this relaxing, thanks to the Reishi hot cocoa that I pretty much make every night with almond milk. They have matcha powder, which is the only matcha I now use. They have these magic mushroom chai latte packets that you can add to water or almond milk for a hot or iced, sweetest sippable treat. And I have to say, even though I don't drink coffee, Four Sigmatic is kind of famous for their multiple kinds of organic, much better for you coffee, even mocha mixes. So you can mocha chocolate. Yeah, yeah. Okay, enough from me. I'm sorry. I just finished a mushroom matcha latte and I'm flying high. But because you listen to this podcast, thanks so much for doing that, by the way. You can save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want to buy off of their site, foursigmatic.com, using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just go to foursigmatic, foursigmatic.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS to automatically save that 15%, baby. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I don't even really like eating mushrooms? Yeah, but now, thanks to Four Sigmatic, my body doesn't need to have shroom FOMO. Okay, again, hit up foursigmatic.com/partyinmyplants to save 15% on this mega boat floating stuff that I always find stuffed into my pockets, purses, luggage, or my bra because I just can't get enough. Okay, so that's a great way to meal prep. You were also going to talk about other things that you do for dinners.
Okay, so this time of the year now, it's like October entering the colder season, I will usually make one really big pot of soup, like on a Sunday or Monday, and then we'll have that either as the base of, say, a soup bowl, which is a macro, what I call like a macro bowl that has all the toppings on top of soup, and I really love that, or it'll just be a side dish, so you have this like hearty, vegetable-heavy component that is ready to go. And I think that really can save you a lot of time in this, like, you know, during soup season, it's what your body wants anyways.
Totally.
And also using the freezer. So this is something I'm trying to get better about, but for the most part, every time you cook dinner, you can probably freeze a portion or a component of that dinner and save it for later. So that, you know, obviously soup, that's a great one. Any sort of stew, if you're making a pasta sauce, you can, you know, not the pasta itself, but freeze the sauce. And so like really thinking ahead towards a time where you might not have time for dinner and not have time to prep dinner and just like freeze whatever you can.
That's amazing. Yeah, totally. And you're also not opposed to like the occasional frozen food anyway, like a pre-made veggie burger. I mean, you do incorporate some packaged foods into your family's life.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we do veggie burgers a lot. Violet likes a lot of the like faux meat type of things that kids would like. Like we get these, you know, vegan chicken nugget things. And I keep stuff like that in the freezer for when there's really no groceries because, you know, that is a situation we find ourselves in a lot. So I'm definitely not against the processed stuff. I just think I like to keep it as a backup and an add-on, not the main component.
And I mean, if you have something like a pre-made soup or stew, then you can just, you know, feel good upgrading a frozen meal in a pinch if you need to. I mean, that's a wonderful tip.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. So are you raising your kiddos vegan?
So for now, yes, you know, they are vegan. So Violet is now a little over 3 and we're really getting into the conversation now of what that means. And she's, you know, only able to comprehend so much. And I only want to go so far. Like she's very sensitive to like when animals or people or anyone gets hurt. And so she haven't exactly gone into, you know, the details of like the cattle industry with her and all of that. But for now, she knows that she eats vegan and she understands that she doesn't eat animal products. But that'll be, you know, the type of conversation that evolves as she gets older and she's able to understand more. And, you know, if we get to the point where she says, I don't want to eat this way, I, you know, when she fully understands what animal products are, and if she chooses to eat that, I won't stop her. I mean, you know, she'll be her own person who can make a decision on her own about what she wants to eat. And I feel like that is very important to have autonomy in that way. But yeah, so for now, vegan, yes. And hopefully we'll just keep the conversation open as she gets older.
That's impressive. That's amazing. So do you think you'll take the approach of educating her about the health consequences and benefits, or are you going to go more ethical or both?
Definitely both. That's really what it is for me. And as far as the health stuff goes, you know, I always like to talk to her about how our bodies feel when we're eating certain things.
That's so cool.
If we're eating a soup and it's like a warm and cozy soup and it's cold outside, I'll say something like, you know, this soup just makes me feel so warm inside and like my stomach feels really good. How does your body feel? And like, you know, we talk about that kind of stuff.
What does she say?
Well, a lot of it is
just says what either, you say.
If she's in a bad mood, she'll say, well, it doesn't make my body feel good, even though she's just, you know, that's like a 3-year-old in her. But if she's, you know, in a good mood and she wants to talk, she'll say how it makes her feel. And, you know, she'll usually say like, oh, this makes me happy, because happy is kind of her umbrella term for like anything that's good right now.
I mean, it's for all of us. All right, come on.
Yeah. So that conversation will, I can see that evolving into, you know, the health side in a more holistic way. I'm never like, oh, you got to eat your kale, it's got vitamin A in it, because I think that's probably the worst thing you could do to convince your child that something's gonna taste good, right?
And to convince an adult, like, oh, yeah. Honestly, I'm never inspired to eat anything because of some nutrients in it. Like, let's call a spade a spade here.
I completely agree. Right, like it's not about the vitamins and minerals in each component. It's about like all of the colors coming together. And I talk about this with her. I'm like, each color does something good for you in a different way, right? That's so like cool. Orange foods often have a lot of vitamin C, and like I don't talk about the vitamin side, but I'm like, you know, the colors make you strong, the colors make you feel good. And you know, she responds to that and she enjoys that conversation.
Eileen, this is phenomenal. Like, this is so profound. No, I mean, this is your norm, but this is incredible. I mean, the fact that you're talking to your 3-year-old about how foods make her feel. Do you understand that most adults do not put together that foods make them feel stuff? This is something I had to learn later in my life. And once I did, it changed my life. And you are teaching that to your daughter from the get-go. And that is just incredible.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was that person who was not in touch with my body, in touch with the food. I was that person until I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to me. And I'm also really hot on this subject right now because I'm writing, you know, the course content. And
your book's all about this. Your family. It's about family eating.
It's about family eating. And I'm outlining like all of the like really specific strategies I do for the Colorful Kids program. And I'm so passionate about this because I think that, you know, in many ways, children aren't given the opportunity to like have a literal seat at the table when it comes to like this type of discussion. And I just, you know, they pick up what you're putting out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's never too young. Like, I mean, I do this stuff with Luna too. Like when she's like, she doesn't have the words to respond with me, but I'm already talking to her about stuff and she's just absorbing it.
Has she started eating solid food?
Yeah, she's 9 months old, so she started when 3 months ago.
Oh, I don't know anything. What was her first food?
So I could tell you every first that Violet had, but the second child is a little harder to...
You're not supposed to admit that.
I know.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
It was probably potato or banana, because those were the first three that like the first month we were introducing her to foods. That's sort of what we did. So it was one of those.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And what was Violet's first food? Avocado, right? Or did I just make that up?
No, it was avocado. Yeah.
Okay. I know. Okay, good. I'm at least a good friend in that. I remember that one. So Halloween's coming up. I don't know. It might have already happened by the time this episode releases-ish, but how are you going to handle Halloween? How do you handle birthday parties? I mean, a lot of candy and cupcakes and sweets get in the mix with kids. I mean, even when I was last visiting you, Ross had picked up Violet from a birthday party, and I think you came home and he was like, oof, I wasn't able to get her special cupcake. Or he was able to get a special cupcake because you got her a vegan cupcake for the party, so she didn't have to eat the normal cupcake. Like, how do you navigate these sugar-inducing situations?
Yeah, so this is a big deal because the food situation, not only at her school, but at all of the social events, is something that we have to navigate constantly. And so, okay, let's start with the birthday parties. I will say that a lot of our friends, like either have vegan options already at the party because we're there or because they know they have multiple friends. A lot of times we'll go to a party and there'll be a vegan cupcake and there's always vegan food. And like, you know, we live in an area where we're not the only vegan family in town. So there's often an option for us.
Yep.
But I never want to be at a party and have all the other kids eating cupcakes and say, sorry, you can't have one to her. So we always bring our own, even if I think there might be some there. And I made it really easy by just, I made a bunch of vanilla cupcakes a while ago. I put them in the freezer. And every time we have a party to go to, we defrost one. And then I do a little special thing with Violet where we put, she gets to put icing on and she puts like sprinkles or chocolate chips or whatever. And she's like super psyched to bring it to the party.
Oh my God, for now, that's so cute.
It's really cute. That's amazing. That's like exciting for her. And
I'm excited about that. I would love, I mean, that's what I do at every adult party I go to. I always bring my own vegan or, you know, planty dessert. Always.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I always bring. I bring a salad, like a hearty salad with some protein and a dessert, because you cannot go to these parties and see all the other desserts. That is just torture to yourself.
Oh, totally.
Well, no matter what age you're at.
If you're 3 years old, it's going to destroy you.
No, also if you're 30, all right? Come on.
Right. So the time that you were over at our house, that was before I had gotten on top of freezing the cupcakes. And there's a vegan bakery in town that we would used to stop at on the way to parties or whatnot. And so Ross had stopped and picked something up for her. And they went to the party. And I don't think I was with them. But they,
she
that
ended
party
up not
had
eating
vegan
it.
Options.
Oh, that's what it
and
was.
And so that's why the cupcake came home. And we, and don't tell her, but we ended up eating it.
Wait, so you can just, how do you defrost the cupcake?
I just take it out of the freezer and let it sit on the counter. Like if I take it out in the morning and then go to the party later, it'll be defrosted.
Amazing.
By, you know, by the time.
So she doesn't feel weird or odd or like a misfit eating her own special cupcake.
Not right now. I don't know what that will look like as she gets older, but for now she's totally happy to have it. And you know, she's never expressed to me that she, you know, I want to eat what the other kids are having. Like she's always been happy with what we have. And I don't know if that's just her personality or her age, but we'll sort of see where that goes as she gets older.
I'm so curious. I don't know what I mean, I was always like trying to be mainstream. So I don't know how I would have felt. But maybe I would have been because I like
to
prepared
do her own
it.
Thing.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Go girl. We can all be little Violet.
Yeah.
So does she not then, I guess she doesn't compare her food to her friends.
She has started to ask me, like, she'll say, ask me if her friends eat vegan food, and she'll come home and be like, oh, does Sarah eat vegan, mommy? And I'll usually be like, well, no, they aren't vegan, but she does like to eat a lot of the same vegan foods that you like she likes to eat crackers or pretzels, you know, like whatever it is. And we'll have that conversation. She's like, oh, okay. Like she really likes to identify like who's vegan, who's not. And then her friends who are vegan, it's like, oh, like so-and-so is vegan. Like, I know that. And it's, she likes to kind of get the lay of the land.
That's really interesting. Wow. So how are you going to do Halloween?
So she is still a little young to do trick-or-treating. And in our town, they do this like big downtown event where there, okay, well, yeah, of course, there's a ton of candy, but it's not like we're going door to door. But there's this thing that I did not invent. It's just, I don't know where this came from. It's probably a Pinterest thing. It's called the Switch Witch. So if you're in a situation where you're trick-or-treating or people are giving out Halloween candy, you bring all that, you get all the candy, the non-vegan candy, bring it home, and then the Switch Witch comes in and switches it out for vegan options.
Oh, my God. It's like the Tooth Fairy.
Exactly.
Does it happen overnight?
You know what? I don't, I think so.
This
I think
the best thing I've ever
heard. Like you wake up in the morning and it's there, but
this
I think, I mean, think about how candy are packaged. It's like fun for someone to give you this brightly colored wrapper and put it in your little pumpkin bag or whatever. So I don't want to deprive her of that experience if she wants it, but then the Switch Witch will come and like give her the stuff that like our family would eat.
I can't.
And maybe
amazing.
That's like roasted carrots and
can
like an apple
please?
While she's still at this
oh,
age.
Oh, good idea. Okay, so that's the answer. So you're not giving her like Twizzlers and Snickers. You're going to give her like apples. That sounds
she's
so lame.
Still,
I'm sorry.
She well,
like no Twizzlers, say, just apples.
Now, you would never be able to pull this over on, like, an 8-year-old, but she is still at the age right now where, like, sliced apples are her jam, and that is just as exciting to her as chocolate. So I'm going to take advantage of that while we still have the opportunity to, for her to get that excited by fruit.
Oh my God, amazing. So what are, okay, I feel like this is just the Violet episode, but
I know.
What are the families, we'll say, favorite recipes from your book? Like, what's Violet? What are the most kid beloved recipes coming out in your new book?
Okay, so right on the front cover there, you can see her little baby hand grabbing roasted Brussels sprout chips. And those are probably her favorite recipe from the book. And if you think your kids would never eat Brussels sprouts, I would recommend trying this recipe. It's got like a little maple syrup and like liquid smoke. So it's like smoky, savory. Kids and adults, like everyone will like that one. Let's see. There, she has her own smoothie recipe in the book, and that's in the summer chapter, and it's her blueberry smoothie, which she likes to make for herself in the summer. Well, obviously, I help her, but
so what? That's, like, so you let her like throw in the ingredients in the blender?
Yeah, definitely. So, and then she gets to flip the switch to turn the blender on. And it's very, very exciting.
That's adorable.
And then like the entire family, all of us like coming together to sit down for one meal, I would say the kabocha squash and lentil stew, which is also, there's a tiny sliver of it on the cover. And that recipe is already on my blog because I wanted to give people, you know, a taste of what they would be getting in the book. And I felt like that was a good one to start with. And so we eat that meal like two or three times a week in the cold months.
Wow. That's amazing. What's Ross's favorite recipe?
I would say in the summer section, there's a barbecue lentil burger, and he really loved that one.
That sounds good. That sounds really, really good. Okay, sandwiches. You're a huge panini sandwich gal. Like, you are making these decadent sandwiches for lunch. My assistant, Sinead, who was helping me prepare for this episode with you, she laughed out loud because you posted some photo of a sandwich, like, dripping crumbs on Luna's head. And thought was hilarious. So talk to us about the listener and me, about your sandwiches. Like, what's your, you know, like you were giving us your formula for a great bowl. What's your like formula for a great sandwich?
Okay, let me tell you where the sandwich thing started. I have been either pregnant or nursing for the past 4 years.
That's insane.
And I've needed like 500-ish calories a day extra for that long. And the sandwich thing started when I was pregnant with Violet and I was just so hungry and I needed the extra bread. So that's why I'm such a sandwich maniac, because I've just been on this pregnancy and nursing thing forever.
Thank you for that background. That makes sense.
Well, right, because people are always like, how do you eat these things?
Yeah, they're quite decadent. Well,
yeah, so for that's like what's working for me right now. But okay, the sandwich thing is basically the macro bowl, except the bread is the grain instead. So you want your protein. Usually I like to put a roasted vegetable in the sandwich. So I often do slices of sweet potato, and it's not like a huge, not like you're eating a sweet potato with two slices of bread. It's just like a little bit that adds sort of the creaminess and the flavor.
So you'll slice it real thin, the sweet potato, and then roast them as little thin slices.
I'll do that. Or sometimes I'll just bake whole sweet potatoes just to have for different meal prep purposes and just like take a chunk out of one of those.
That makes sense.
And then I always put a vegan cheese because I like the melty texture of the cheese.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
What protein do you typically do in a sandwich?
I like tempeh bacon, or I'll do, sometimes if I don't have anything prepared, I'll just take tofu and I'll quickly press the water out of it and like marinate it in tempeh and rice vinegar. Or excuse me.
Tamari.
Yeah, not tempeh. In tamari.
That's awesome. Do you have tempeh bacon recipe in the second book too, or just the first?
I put it in the second one, just in the staple section, because I want people to staple. Have it.
Because it's a staple. Right. Good. Yeah. Glad I asked. Okay. Tell me some of your must-have kitchen equipment and gadgets for cooking for a family, because you are a cooking machine and you get the kids in there, and I don't know if Ross helps, but like, what are your go-to supplies?
Ooh, good question. I would say glass storage containers, like however many you think you need, just double it because I'm constantly running out of them and I have so many.
Good to know. Where do you get yours?
I like to get my Bed Bath & Beyond coupon situation on. Yeah.
I was just cleaning out an old storage unit that we haven't touched. Not unit, it's a drawer. Since we moved in like 5 years ago. And I just found 3 Bed Bath & Beyond coupons this morning. Hell amazing. Yeah. Although, and well, they don't
check
expire,
the expiration
right?
dates.
I thought they don't
no,
expire.
They, let me tell you from personal experience, you recently started checking them.
Oh, wow. Because they're like 2015. I thought they were like, they go on
oh,
forever.
Girl.
Okay, I'll have no. to find some online. Can you deal me some coupons?
You know what? I might be able to hook you up. Okay. But, okay, so the glass storage containers I like, and also little reusable snack bags. Because here's the thing about kids. They make a ton of waste. And I'm constantly trying to reduce how much single-use plastic we use. And if you think about, like, think about how many Ziploc baggies you used as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and as an adult.
Totally. So I have stainless steel lunch boxes for my girls. And I also have these little, I like the Stasher bags. They're mm-hmm. the silicone reusable bags. And those have been my favorite as far as, like, snack packing for snacks goes. And I also have those, do you know those silicone stretchy lids? They're kind of like a newish thing that you can put over like any plate or bowl.
No. So you could just like keep like a dinner plate as a leftover?
Exactly. So you just stretch the whole thing. It's like an alternative to plastic wrap.
Amazing.
I'll send you some links.
Please do. We'll put it in the show notes because this sounds like really helpful stuff.
Right. So it's all about like saving the leftovers mm-hmm. and then being prepared with the snacks and trying to not use a single use plastic item for every single meal.
Okay. What are in your lunch boxes for the kids? What's like your go-to lunchbox strategy?
At Violet's school and at most schools, she can't have any type of nuts. So that's like tree nuts. So like we can't do peanut butter and jellies. We can't do like almond balls. Like we, you know, having no nuts has been a challenge to overcome in the lunchbox situation. So sandwich wise, I'll often do like a chickpea tuna salad sandwich for, because she really likes to have a sandwich as like the base of the meal. So like a chickpea tuna salad sandwich, I'll do tempeh bacon for her. Sometimes I'll do mashed avocado and hummus. Mm. And on the side, she's currently very into like cucumber and carrot sticks. And part of that is that, well, we just sort of wrapped up the summer season with our garden, but we're growing so many cucumbers and carrots. And going back to the ownership idea, she was so proud of herself for growing those vegetables. So slicing those up and putting it in her lunchbox was major because she wanted to show everyone at school the cucumbers she grew.
That's so sweet. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that would be another hot tip. Like, if your kid won't eat cucumbers, grow them yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask about the garden. Likely. Should we just go into that or we'll shelf that for 1 sec? We're coming back to it.
I have lunchbox photos. I keep it as an Instagram story archive so people can just go see the photos there.
So you have like helpful. A sandwich and then you have a veggie side. Do you do a fruit and or a dessert sweet thing?
I don't do a sweet, but I usually do a fruit. So like apple slices or orange, like whatever is sort of in season.
Got it. And I feel like this is probably the same you pack for Ross, isn't it? Or is it a little bit more sophisticated?
No, it's the same.
I knew it.
It's the same.
It's like literally the same. So, but doesn't he need more calories?
Yeah. So, you know, his sandwich will be thicker than hers. But it's the same. Usually it's just different quantities.
I mean, that's amazing. That's a great piece of advice for people. Like if you're packing lunch for your husband and like your adult kid or your little kid or whatever, just the same food, just different quantities. It's amazing.
Yep. Exactly.
Boom. Golden nuggets, girl. These are awesome pieces of advice. Okay. So other kitchen equipments, you mentioned like storage things, but like obviously like what are you guys using food processors? I mean, I know this is silly, but like truly like what are the go-to, because you're kind of a minimalist in the kitchen. Like you don't have a million different gadgets and stuff. So like what are the ones that you all use like, all the time?
You're right. I don't believe in the gadget thing. I would say it's so minimal. Like everyone probably already has the stuff we're using. Well, so, okay, let me start. The splurge is we do have the Vitamix, the very high power blender, but I use it 8 times a day and I don't even use a food processor. I mostly just use the Vitamix.
I know. I think you're crazy.
I know, but I like my counters very clear and I don't like to have to, it's a whole thing. But so the Vitamix all the time. I use cast iron pans instead of non-stick, like things that would be coated with Teflon or other non-stick type of cookware. I use cast iron because that's like an eco-friendly, non-toxic, non-stick solution.
Mm. So blender, cast iron, that's awesome. So do you just have like one cast iron that you use pretty much for everything on the
well,
stove?
Well, I also have like a set of stainless steel pots and pans.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I use those too.
And you have your panini press.
Well, yeah, but it's not a panini press. It's a George Foreman grill that I found in my uncle's basement many years ago.
That's hilarious. Go George Foreman.
But it works.
Yeah. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So gardening, you recently, this past summer or the summer before, when did you start your garden?
No, this summer.
This summer.
Last summer.
That's crazy because by the end of the summer, you had like a farm. You were like your own food co-op.
we were really big on our first year. Well, not really, you know, we went for it.
Okay, so tell us everything. I mean, what inspired you to start it, first of all?
Okay, well, let me just say, I actually wrote a whole blog post that like really goes deep about why we started it, exactly what we did. If people want to know like exactly what we grew and like what worked and what didn't, you can find that on my blog somewhere.
Will
recently.
You send me that? But so I can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So I've been feeling for a long time that gardening was the next step in my food journey, like growing my own food, because I'm all about connecting to the earth through the seasons and eating what's local and eating what, you know, Mother Earth intends for us to eat at certain points in the year. But I had been living, as you know, in a teeny tiny apartment in Brooklyn with no outdoor space, so it just wasn't possible. And going to the farmer's market was the closest I could get to that experience. So as soon as we moved out to the suburbs and we have a house with enough land that gets sunshine, I mean, we just like couldn't wait to get some seeds in the ground. And it's really been this huge thing for us where it's a way for our family to connect to the earth and do something together that's nourishing for our bodies. And it's a learning experience for the girls. And even Luna, who's 9 months old, we still have, even though it's October, we still have some tomatoes that are, you know, getting ripe, and she'll go out there and she'll grab for the red ones and try them in her mouth. Like, she already knows. And so it's just been this huge thing for us. And we're so excited to, you know, build the garden out and try and grow even more and get to the point where we're able to like preserve things for the whole year.
Look at you. It's amazing. What was the hardest, what's the hardest part?
Finding the time. I think just like, you know, we're busy. Ross like wanted to build the raised beds and mix the soil and do all of that. And just finding the time to get that part started. But now that we have it, like, we're good for next year. We just have to put the seeds in the ground.
Okay. So seriously, because I'm moving soon, do you have enough information on your blog to get me started? Or do I need to have you come over and we'll film a video so everyone can see how you helped me set up my first garden?
I love it. Let's definitely do that.
Okay.
But let me just preface all of this by saying, I know nothing, and you'll see on the blog exactly how we got started. I have a good friend who lives on a farm in California, and I text her questions all of the time, and I Google things. And just by doing that minimal amount of work, I was able to get huge results.
Yeah.
So I don't have gardening secrets, but I have done a lot of the legwork as far as, you know, what's going to work, and I can share what, like, you'll see on the blog post, I showed exactly what worked for us and what sort of rookie mistakes we made.
That's so cool.
I think that's the whole thing. Every year, we're not relying on it for our main source of food.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're just learning, and it's, you know, maybe 10 years down the line, we'll, you know, really feel like we have like control over it as much as we can.
So cool. So like, how would you just add things? Like, I know you grew lettuce, and so you're like, here's my salad with my own lettuce, which is sick. And Violet had her carrots and cucumbers that she grew. So you just would use the plants that you were growing as infusing them into your routine of eating, right? They were like augmenting, and there's special pride and amazement that like this came from our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
That's so
cool. And it's like as organic as it can get, as local as it can get. And the flavor, I mean, you know, when you pick a tomato and you eat it 10 seconds later, it's going to taste better than any tomato you could even get at the farmer's market, because the less time it's been off the vine, the better it's going to taste.
That is so, so cool. Amazing. So are you pickling and fermenting any of it?
Yeah, we made a ton of pickles. We were growing cabbages to ferment, but cabbage was one of the plants that did not make it.
But we did do a lot of pickles, and next year I have big plans for sauerkraut.
Big plans. And what role do the kids play in it, in the garden? What does Violet do? Because, I mean, I can only imagine if she's blending things, well, throwing things in blenders and turning on the switch, and if she's helping, you know, cook, what is she doing in the garden?
She's done everything. She was out there when we were mixing the soil to put in the bed. She was out there with her tiny rake, like spreading it out in the bed. And she would go out there with her own watering can.
Oh,
and
my
we
God.
Set up a, what do you call it? A rain barrel. So we catch the water when it rains from through the gutter of our house. So we don't have to, you know, it's like a closed loop for the water.
Cool.
So she'll go to the rain barrel, open it up, you know, have the water go into her own little watering can and go water the plants. When it's time to pick stuff, she'll pull it out of the ground. I mean, she can do, that's the amazing thing about gardening. It's just so, it's so natural to us, and it's, your kids can basically do everything that you could do in the garden.
So cool. I feel like I couldn't do any of that yet because I have no idea, but if Violet can do it, I have faith. I have
faith.
You can
do it. You'll see. It's like, so much, it can seem so overwhelming, but then it's really, I mean, how simple is it? You put a seed in the ground and it grows. I mean, no, there's a lot more to it, but it's really like innate.
Yeah. It's pretty natural, I would say. Pretty organic.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I'm going to cook a recipe from your book tonight for dinner because I'm fortunate enough to have an advanced copy. What should I make?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So it's October, so you need to obviously be in the fall section. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, no, remind me, you don't like mushrooms?
Jesse hates them.
Okay, so I was going to, so for other listeners, the mushroom and tempeh white chili is great, but I'm not going to force Jesse to eat mushrooms.
Yeah.
I would say the butternut squash and apple soup would be great for tonight because it's supposed to rain all night and that's really cozy.
Doing it. Done. Thank you.
Yay.
Amazing. So yeah, so your book is organized by seasons.
Yes.
In case people did not catch on to that. So it's organized by seasons as well as it just includes all sorts of things that families would love, right? Give us the spark notes.
Right. So it's organized by seasons, and the way the family aspect and seasonal aspect ties in is that it's all about connecting to the earth and really being able to listen to our bodies and know what we need at certain times. And I feel like that is something that's missing from a lot of children's education about food. And it all ties into learning about where your food comes from, how it's grown, you know, how did it get to you? How did it get to your plate from where it was grown? And letting kids see into that process and empowering them in that way is only going to help their foundation of colorful, nutritious eating become stronger. And I just feel like the book is, it's so cozy that I overuse that word so much, but when you think back to your childhood, it's such a good word. And like, think back to your childhood, like think about each season, like don't you just think of like apple picking in October and like in the winter eating like certain foods, and it's like family and food, it all just like goes hand in hand. And this book really explores what's in season during each time of the year and gives you family friendly, I say family friendly, but like I use that term loosely because I think most food is quote unquote family friendly, but this, you know, food that the entire family will enjoy for each season.
Awesome. I just had a thought. When you were a kid and you didn't like fruit, did you still go apple picking?
Okay, so I said that, and I have one very vague memory of going apple picking in Connecticut. Probably in Avon, you know?
Yeah.
But we lived in Florida, so there weren't apple orchards.
Oh, so you didn't really have the real seasons.
No, we didn't. And that's something I discussed in the book. I was so out. I didn't get the seasonal thing because we lived where it was, the seasons were hot or hotter.
Or humid. Wow.
Right.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I feel very blessed to have the seasons. It's a really wonderful thing.
I know a lot of people live where, like, you know, it's hot all the time or whatnot, but like when you don't have the rhythm to your life, it's like, where do things fall into place?
Like, when is it new? When is it change? When is there change? Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Speaking of change, no good segue. What is your favorite planty restaurant right now? A lot of things have changed. How about that? You've since moved out of the city into New Jersey. So do you have any, and a lot of restaurants have closed, but since our last update on fave restaurants, do you have a favorite one?
Okay, so the last time we were in Brooklyn, we went to Clementine Bakery, which was probably on our original list. But yes, like since then, they've expanded.
I still never been.
Huge location. Oh my gosh, Tali, we'll go. They've expanded to this huge, much larger location. They have dinner, and it's so good. It's if you think my sandwiches are something you want, like their sandwiches put mine to shame, like wow. Beyond. Yeah, so it's all vegan, but it's all like cozy comfort food.
Cozy, there you go. Wow, that is your yeah. word. Where in Brooklyn is it? What part of Brooklyn?
It's like it's kind of in Clinton Hill, Fort Greene. It's off okay. the G, cool. So you have to take the G train there.
Good to know. Okay, your favorite plant to eat?
Right now, I'm enjoying Brussels sprouts a lot.
What's your favorite way? The chip recipe from your book?
The chips, or just like roasted with olive oil and salt. Just classic. It's so good.
Okay, cool. What is your favorite thing that you do for self-care?
Oh my God. Well, right now, that area of my life is pretty bleak. Yeah. I would say that's something I'm working on because between like work, kids, sleep, there's not that much time in between. Mm-hmm. So I would say, well, okay, one thing I have been trying to do is I get up at 5 now. The rest of them will sleep anywhere between 5 and 7. So I get up at 5 so I can have an hour to myself before everyone else is up.
Wow. What do you do in that hour?
Isn't that depressing?
It's life. It's inspiring that you do that for yourself.
Yeah, no, it's good. And you're going to laugh. I pull tarot cards recently. I started doing that. And I write my journal. I like listen to music.
There
and
you
I drink
go.
Coffee.
Okay.
And then the coffee kicks in. I do like 30 minutes of work.
Once the coffee kicks in. Okay, I would call a lot of that self-care, sister.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. A book besides your own that's inspired you in an awesome way.
Yours.
Am I
right that I was the first person to have the preview copy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I was your first reader.
Oh, my God.
It was amazing. I was reading it, I was getting so fired up. Like, I'm going to eat more plants. I'm going to eat healthier. I'm going to get on track.
Stop it.
I forgot that I already eat the way your book, you know, the rest. I got so excited to, like, follow your advice that I kind of forgot I already do. But I am so excited about your book.
That is the kindest thing ever. I did not expect you to say that because I did not think – I forgot. I gave you my book. I am touched. I'm blushing. I'm smiling. Thank you. That's amazing to hear. That's awesome.
No, I was so proud. I was like crying. I was just so proud of you. It's such a great book. It's so far beyond a cookbook. It's the type of book that had I had that 12 years ago, my whole journey would have been accelerated so much. It wouldn't have taken me years.
Oh yeah. God. Can we get this in writing and like put it on the cover? No, yeah, just kidding. Thank you. I'm so touched. Thank you so much. That's amazing. Woo!
Of course.
2020, April 2020, babies.
Yeah.
And your book comes out December 19th.
December 3rd.
December, yes. Well, yeah, 2019. December 3rd. And you're having a party here in New York on December 8th?
Yes. At the Williams-Sonoma in Columbus Circle
at 2 p.m. 2 p.m. I remember you're like, I made a family-friendly time. I died when you said that. So 2 p.m. December 8th in Columbus Circle at the Williams-Sonoma. Mm-hmm. That'll be your big book launch party, family friendly.
Yes.
What can people expect? I really hope they attend. I didn't tell you this, but I've canceled plans that I had so I could attend because I'm not missing another book event because I wasn't able to make your first book party. So I am there. Everyone should come.
Oh, yeah.
What should I expect? What kind of family friendly fun are we having?
Okay. Well, I'm so happy you're going to be there. And I appreciate you making it a priority. But so I'm going to be demoing two recipes. I have like a gorgeous kitchen. Have you been to that location? Like a gorgeous kitchen space.
Nice.
And so I'm going to be making two recipes to try. And then I have, as the pre-order bonus to my book, I have this coloring book that goes over it's the ABCs of plant-based ingredients. But anyways, I'm going to print that out and have a coloring station for the kids. And it's just so, I mean, Williams-Sonoma and this December is like the coziest. I know I just used the word again. This is like the best, most cozy place to be. So we're gonna have food, coloring,
oh my gosh,
drinks, books, and hugs.
Make it extra cozy. I love it. Okay, great. So where should everybody go to pre-order your book, to find more about the party, get on the wait list for your upcoming program that's launching in January?
Yes. So on my website, thecolorfulkitchen.com, you can find all of that. You can pre-order the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, wherever you like to get your books. And then you can go to my website to fill out the form to get the instant pre-order bonus bundle. And that'll just come as a download to your email. And then also on my website, you can get on the wait list for the Colorful Kids program.
I am so excited for all of this. Your book is, I just moved a few books, like a select, like three books into our apartment as we're starting our move. And I just wanted my favorite, most straightforward, simple, reliable books. And yours is one of those three. It's just, I mean, it is my go-to when I want anything cozy and colorful and not complicated. So everyone should go get your book. And these tips in this chat were amazing. You make me want to have kids. / when I have kids, you're mentoring me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited by you're so many of the things you just said.
Well, thank you so much. This was phenomenal. I feel awkward thanking you. I'm just happy we got to hang out and share publicly.
Thank you so much, Polly. This is so fun.
Thank you so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. So what'd you think? Do you think it's safe for me to sing, "We are family, mom, 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 mom. I got all my plant eaters and me"? So sorry I didn't get this shout out to you in time to pull your own Switch Witch this Halloween, but next year I know you will nail it. In fact, I really feel like applying any of Eileen's advice from this chat works like green leafy gangbusters, especially that jazz about repeat exposure, which I think also applies to husbands who say they hate mushrooms but are slowly warming up to them. Also, you heard her mention in my book at the end, and I promise on all the potatoes on the planet, I did not ask her to do that. But I also promise on all the potatoes that you'll love my book, and I am delighted to share that it is officially available for pre-order. It comes out in April 2020. So to pre-order Party in Your Plants, yes, this book is about you, not me, your plants this time, not mine, and to get Eileen's brilliant fam-friendly planty book, head to partyinmyplants.com/168.